Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at ethostrainingshy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. So, I know how to use jujitsu as a form of therapy, I would say. It's a great tool to help with stress relief. But dance therapy and dance movement, is a little bit of a different tool. And I had my next guest, message me on Facebook and reach out wondering if I would like to have somebody come on and talk about it. So I have Erica Hornthal here with me today. Erica is the founder and CEO of Chicago Dance Therapy, which is located in Northfield, correct? Mm-hmm. Awesome. So welcome, Erica. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah. Thank you for answering my message.
Of course. Absolutely. I was like, oh my God, this sounds so interesting. I have to have her on. But Erica is a licensed clinical professional counselor and board certified dance and movement therapist. Her areas of expertise include cognitive and movement disorders, neurologic conditions, anxiety and depression, PTSD, trauma, including rape and sexual assault, eating disorders, loss, and phase of life issues. That's a lot.
It is. That's kind of evolved as I've continued to do the work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I really want to know, and one of the things that I love that I noticed on, I don't know if it was your site or the social media, but you've kind of taken on the tagline of the therapist that moves you, which I think is just amazing. And I know how important movement is in my life. And I try and, you know, kind of bring that up with clients of mine too, just physical activity and movement to help with stress relief, obviously weight loss, self-confidence, all that good stuff. But before we go into what dance and movement therapy is, how did you get started? How give us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So dance-wise, I've been dancing since I was young. I think as I got older, I realized more and more how much of my own therapy it became. It got me through some really tough times in school. I moved around a lot and transitioned, and that was the kind of constant in my life that allowed for some type of emotional outlet, mm-hmm. or sometimes an escape.
Yeah.
And so when it came time to deciding, you know, what my career path should be, I had a really hard time letting go of dance. At the time, I remember people kind of giving me the option of, well, you'll either be a professional dancer, which I always tell people I just knew that was not in the cards, mm-hmm. for me. I had the passion and the heart, but not the technique. And it seemed like the only other avenue was being a studio owner or a dance instructor. And that also didn't sit well with me. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to say I have patience for my clients, but I don't have patience to teach dance. And so that kind of led me down some interesting paths. What do I do? How do I continue to use dance as part of my career?
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, one of my advisors, when I was in undergraduate, actually started at University of Florida, mentioned, you know, I see you're taking Psych 101. What do you think about it? It was kind of early on in my freshman year where we're deciding, is this really what you want? Are you talented enough to continue down this path?
Like, is this what I want to do?
Right, right. But I wanted to be realistic, you know, and not struggle, so to speak,
right.
You know? And she said, you should look into dance therapy. And I probably looked at her the way everybody looks at me from time to time of like, that's nice. What is that?
What is that?
Right. Hmm. Did you just make that up? Does that really exist? She's like, go home, go back to your dorm room, Google it. I made my decision that night. I was like, I declared myself a psych major, knew that I was going to go right on to get my master's in dance movement therapy and counseling. And
oh my gosh.
I kind of never looked back. It just, you know, you get that feeling that inside yes. that's like, this is my path. This is what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what it's going to look like.
But you knew it was that gut feeling.
It was.
And reaction when you learned about it. But how amazing, like, you were looking for something that kind of, you know, encompassed the dance, and then you're going into therapy and wanting to be able to help others. I mean, to be able to put those two together, and that there's actually something you could study
right.
for that.
I was like, I don't have to create this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And for the longest time, I knew I wanted to help people. I mean, even as a kid, I thought I wanted to, like, help animals. I thought about being a vet and then a... Mm-hmm. marine biologist. I kind of in somewhere in my mind thought, oh, I'll be a nurse. And the older I got, the more I really saw what that involved. I realistically knew that I could not be the person that cleaned up some of those physical messes, which thank God right. for nurses, because
they're
a dime a dozen. They're just, yeah, incredible people. So I realized that I could clean up emotional messes. And that's where I decided to put my intention for healing, you know, and for helping people. I was like, I've been a listener my whole life. I think I can do this for a living. And as a dance therapist, I get to listen with my entire body, which is really new and exciting. And it's different every time I meet someone.
Wow. So, no, I mean, you know, I love bringing people on. Obviously, that's one of the points of this podcast, is bringing people on to share their expertise and their experience and their stories in, you know, sharing that same mission of wanting to help other people and help other people better themselves. But also, you know, I feel like too, is a perspective of us kind of being in, you know, similar industries of like service and helping people. You are a listener. Like that's what I think that's something, a skill that we can tend to be born with or learned, you know, a learned skill, but people just want to be heard and people want to be helped and guided through situations. So being able to do that, but then also bringing in this movement part of it, I think is just such a unique thing. And I want to know what is the definition of dance and movement therapy? Because I not to cut you off, but I can envision, like, I think when people hear this, it's like, are you just getting up and dancing? Is that like the movement? Is that part of the therapy?
Right.
Or what can it mean?
Or people, you know, hear the word dance, which kind of freaks some people out. And then they hear the word therapy, which also freaks people right. out, you know, and they're like, well, maybe it's dancing to feel better, you
right.
know, because
totally.
I shop to feel better. Uh-huh. I, you know, have chocolate to feel better. Like, you know, it makes sense that we're kind of putting two words together.
Yes.
The interesting piece is when you put those two words together, it makes a profession, not just a phrase,
right.
you know? So I've toyed with the definition myself to mm-hmm. make it more accessible. I like to say that dance movement therapy is the use of movement to assess, observe, and intervene in the therapeutic relationship. More typically, the definition, at least by the American Dance Therapy Association, is the psychotherapeutic use of movement to facilitate integration of the individual. Which okay. is filled with a lot of big words, mm-hmm. and not everybody knows what they mean.
Yeah.
I like to just break it down. You know, it's just movement in all forms to just create well-being, you know, and to just help the person
that.
On a therapeutic level.
So what does it look like when somebody comes to see you? What is like a first assessment or a first consultation or appointment?
Surprisingly, I think, because I've been in therapy myself, I think it looks very similar to when you're going to go meet a talk therapist. Mm-hmm. We've created a space that has a place where people can sit and, you know, lay on a sofa if they want to, or sit in a chair. The difference is that there's space to move around. So it's encouraged for you to stretch. It's encouraged for you to get up and move. And that is always invited into the session itself. So mm-hmm. if I notice somebody is catching their breath or having a hard time speaking, or they're having a hard time getting out what they want to say, or I can tell there's more that needs to be said, but it's not coming out mm-hmm. in a verbal way, then I can invite the person to identify, sit with, and support what they're feeling in their body. Okay. And sometimes that furthers the process mm-hmm. or it facilitates the session, you know, because depending on the age of the person or how they're feeling, words can be difficult. It can be hard to express what we're saying. We don't want to open up. I've, you know, worked with several people that even though they're there, it's That's almost a like a guessing game,
yeah.
right? Like I'm supposed to infer what you want me to get, right. you know, or like read your mind, which would be cool, but that's not, not my forte. And I can just say, what are you feeling? You mm-hmm. know, I'm anxious. Well, how do you know you're anxious? Like, what about your body is telling you that you are an anxious person or that mm-hmm. you're in an anxious state? And then we kind of go from there. You know, we've had moments where we identify themes in a okay. session. And if we feel kind of talked out, I can say, well, how about we move this? You know, let's sometimes we'll use the word embody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's embody this theme of vulnerability. What does that look like in your body? Is there a statue? What's the shape that vulnerability takes on? What's the opposite of vulnerability? You know, and it takes people out of that higher functioning cognitive process and brings it into a more organic place where the body can be heard and seen and validated. Like you were saying, people just want to be seen and they want to be heard.
Totally. And I love that because I think sometimes when we are in that situation and it's like, okay, now we have to talk. We have to talk and express our emotions and how we're feeling. That can be hard. I mean, I know there's situations where in my life, I've felt like I had to walk on eggshells and I wasn't able to kind of communicate what I was really feeling if mm-hmm. people feel intimidated or whatever, you know, that reasoning may be. But to be able to step out of that and kind of take your mind literally off of that of having to open up and it's like, okay, let's move around, let's reset, or paying attention to what the person's body language is. And mm-hmm. if they are anxious, if they're, you know, fidgeting or whatever that could be. But I think once you kind of do that and embrace that physical side of it, is it almost easier for them to kind of come out and talk about their emotions a little bit?
It can be. This actually, you know, obviously without identifying the person, I had a session yesterday where vulnerability came up. I guess that's why it's on my mind. And so as movement therapists, we are some more so than others because you can actually specialize in an area called movement analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We are schooled in patterning and movement habits of the body. And although I'm not one to say like, this is what it has to look like, or we're going to embrace this movement because this is what it means, there are markers. There are things that we can encourage people to do in the body that can open up certain feelings, certain emotions.
Okay.
And talking about vulnerability, this client in particular, at some point took on this posture mm-hmm. and it clicked in my head of like, that it's working. Like, this is why we do what we do, because
wow.
without me saying, try this posture on, it organically happened
mm-hmm.
and she embraced her own sense of vulnerability. And it was so empowering for her. So I think just our body has so much wisdom and knowledge mm-hmm. that we forget about. You know, we cover it up with conveniences and, as much as I love it, technology.
Right.
And we forget that, like, our body can say so much. We have to turn our brains down sometimes. We really have to limit the talking in the head to let the body speak for what's going on.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Because I think so many times we tend to overanalyze things and we're always just in our head. And it even comes down to when we're trying to figure out what choices or decisions we want to make in life. It's like, pay attention to like how you feel. What is that reaction? Like when you were looking that up about dance therapy, you knew in your gut that this was something that you had to do.
Yeah.
And when we overthink, I think we can like talk ourselves out of anything. And so we can just overthink.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to really kind of trust what our body says and learning to be more open to that awareness and allowing ourselves to kind of pay attention to that.
Yeah.
I think that's huge.
And that's actually, so as you were, you know, kind of going through the list of populations and mm-hmm. maybe specialties, those are the people that have found me. So oddly enough, the specialty to me is actually working with people who want to hone that skill, what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
They want to learn how to trust their gut, trust their intuition, listen to their body. And for whatever reason, a lot of individuals that are living with certain diagnoses or mm-hmm. mental health concerns like trauma, PTSD, cognitive or behavioral issues, dementia, that's overshadowed.
Right.
And that's like the main reason that they're coming is like, teach me how to listen to my body again, because I override it constantly, or I shut it down on purpose, or it's shut down because it's too painful to experience things in the raw, you know, right. in the authentic way. And my body doesn't know how to deal with that. And so my brain comes into the rescue, you know, and protects me, which is great. That's what mm-hmm. it's supposed to do. But our bodies can do that too. And I always say, like, our body is actually the biggest tool that we have that we don't know to use. Like, we just don't use it in the way that we can.
Well, I think too, you know, especially with, a lot of mental health issues and awareness, there's so much focus just on the mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the greatest things we can do is using movement and even in the fact of physically, to be able to help lower those cortisol levels, mm-hmm. those stress levels, and increase endorphins, in the body, and just feeling better, having an overall better state of being. Mm-hmm. You know, and that might not necessarily be in paying attention to how our body is, but when we kind of let go of that, always, you know, we're so focused in the mind, but really bringing it to the physical. And, you know, I don't know if you go through also as part of this different exercises or breath work that can help the person mm-hmm. Kind of get back to themselves and get out of their mind for a second, or just mm-hmm. be more present and calm, but also paying attention to their kind of regular own individual body language and signs.
Yeah, yeah. So breath work is, I mean, it's huge, mostly because it's to me, one of the most primitive forms of movement, mm-hmm. not just to me, I think that dance therapists across the board would agree.
Yes.
Other clinicians would agree. You know, and the fact that we don't really breathe correctly, you know, we breathe in this higher part of our chest, mm-hmm. the ability to breathe into our diaphragm, like singers, opera singers, you know, performers know to do more instinctively than we, actually signals that parasympathetic nervous system. So it's one thing to tell somebody, oh, calm down, take a deep breath, right? I've been on the receiving end of that. It doesn't yep. always work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually know how to take a deep breath, or how to move in a certain way, or how you do already move in a certain way that's perpetuating those patterns,
mm-hmm.
it takes a lot of awareness, but breath oftentimes is like the place to start. You know, how do you feel when you're breathing? Where do you feel your breath?
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you're focusing on your body, not the thoughts that are perseverating in your head. And
totally.
They come back. I mean, mm-hmm. they float in, and then you notice them and you let them go. And that's human. You know, that's normal.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to have the connection to your body and realize, like, wow, this can actually help me instead of harm me.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's funny though with the breathing, and you know, I talk about this a lot, but it's like we don't breathe right. We're not taking,
right.
you know, yeah. good deep breaths, like you said. And even just being aware, I think is huge, that recognition, but mm-hmm. taking the time to even just take deep breaths, that can just bring you in such a place of like calm mm-hmm. and peace. And that is a start. That's a form of meditation, or that's a form of therapy, or, you know, whatever it may be. But when we have all those thoughts going on in our mind, just bringing it back to that breath.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oftentimes too, and, you know, in jujitsu, it's like when people just start out, you have to breathe. People, I think when they get tense and they're in situations where they're uncomfortable, they want to hold their breath and
yes.
their body tenses up. And when you do that, it's really hard to react. And I think you exude a lot of energy. We also feel tired and fatigued and more panicked.
Right.
You know, so that's something I think it would be really interesting too for you to come in and see and experience a jujitsu class.
Yeah, yeah.
To see how that movement and breath work and all of that kind of, you know, mind, body, soul kind of work together.
Yeah.
In a therapeutic format,
yeah,
I think.
Definitely. You know, I mean, we know exercise is good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know. I say this day and age because we are so aware of how physical exercise is good for us.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, we get into this headspace, you know, and sometimes it becomes commercial or it becomes competitive. And, you know, I've had it too, where I've tried certain exercises. I walk away and I'm like, I don't feel rejuvenated.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't, maybe my body worked, right? But I'm fatigued and now I just want to go have like a really sugary snack. And, you know, so being mindful and present when we're doing the exercises is actually a much better way of approaching physical health. It's like we always want mental health to be a part of it.
Right.
And that's, I don't know, that's a shift I think that still needs to happen. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's something, it, you know, you don't want to just do something to do it and think, well, I know this is going to make me look good or feel good, so I should just do it. But you have to really enjoy it and like it and not force yourself to do something. I think there's that part of it
right.
with mentally feeling good about it and enjoying it and then getting the physical benefits out of it as well.
Yeah. And it's been a while, but I remember like as a kid doing karate, various martial arts. I think that tends to be built into it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, let's really reflect. Let's be self-aware. Yes. You know, it's not just the physicality, although it's so much physical, you know. I always really appreciated that because it wasn't just about the sweats, you know, the intensity. It was like, this is a discipline. You know, it's a discipline. And that, to me, is mind, body, spirit.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things, because, you know, of course, I always have to talk about jiu-jitsu on the podcast. Yeah. But
why not? It's movement it's therapy. Just,
I mean, it is. But you have to, you know, you almost have to really kind of let go of your ego. And you have to be completely, you know, present so that you don't get injured on the mats. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're not focusing and paying attention and you're focusing on the thoughts in your head, it, you know, you can really get hurt. But when you have that time in your training and you don't think about anything and you're so aware and present in that moment, whatever was ailing you or bothering you, you usually walk off the mats feeling so much better. Mm. And it's like, if I can achieve that, like I can achieve or conquer whatever it is that was bothering me
right.
or causing me stress.
Right.
You know, so it definitely is. It's great to, I think, do anything that just makes you feel good, mind, body, and soul.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you're in a better place mentally, you're more able to know your own limitations. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had conversations with clinicians, with dancers, you know, on this idea, like this connection between mental health and injury, you know, and it's like we can tend to overdo things and really injure ourselves and cause more damage.
Right.
If we're not really present to what we're feeling, you know, it's good to challenge and it's good to push ourselves, but that element of being present and really being aware of the body and what's coming up for it can actually help us be better performers and better athletes.
And absolutely.
We can still get hurt, but odds are you recover from the injury more wholly, like holistically, and sometimes quicker because you're really listening to what your body needs. You're not going to the mind and like, okay, just push. We can do it.
That's what it is. That's the difference. When you don't want to deal with something, you're avoiding something. Maybe it's physically or mentally or emotionally, but you just keep pushing forward. And that's usually when it's like, okay, you're going to break down even more or cause further injury. And then that's a vicious cycle because then in the mind, you're feeling so much more depressed and feeling anxious and all this anxiety. And it's just that causes other health issues. And
yeah. And I've had professionals like dancers and athletes alike say like, now I hate what I do because it actually brings up more grief and strife and stress than it used to when I got into this because I loved it.
Right.
You know, and we don't want to get into that cycle. Like we want to be able to love what we do, whether it's a hobby or your profession. And so, just being really present to the body and the mind and meeting it in that intersection, you know, kind of playing that delicate balance of, yes, one's going to take over at some point, you know, and then bringing it back to that mind-body connection.
I mean, it's always about the balance that I think we struggle for.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's always going to be a little bit off, but I think when you can get as close as possible, that's a huge accomplishment.
Yes.
You know, just
so hard, but yes.
In daily life with anything. But I saw something that you posted on your, I think it was your Facebook or Instagram the other day, and I shared it, I believe. But it was just a visual, a nice little visual aid about how emotions can harm your body.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that. But it's so true that we can recognize when we do pay attention physically that there are a lot of emotions where we can be feeling that reaction kind of through our body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I thought that was such a useful tool that you shared because people don't, I think a lot of people take stress for granted and don't really think that it can cause.
Yeah. We normalize
other issues.
You know, oh, stress, it's part of life, you know, and that's, well, I'll say to clients, like, it's not like we're not looking to eliminate anxiety. Like that is a normal feeling, mm-hmm. right? And actually, everybody gets it to a varying degree, but it's when something really takes over your life and impacts your quality of life and your daily right. functioning, you know, and if stress is that much a part of your life that it's normal, mm-hmm. you know, and there's never relief from it, we start to make excuses for it. You know, oh, I have chronic headaches, so, you know, this is my prescription that I take, or there really are ways that stress and different mental health issues manifest in the body. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, that disease will find the places that that we kind of block, you know, like the places that we totally. Really don't pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I guess I can't say forever, you know, in every situation because there's genetics and environment.
Of course.
But disease will reside in those places, you know, and stress is a big one because it attaches to so many different places. My being aware myself, I know that my stress attaches to my shoulder blades and my neck.
Oh, totally.
And the minute I start to like tingle or I get like that twinge, I think in the past, you know, my go-to would have been like, okay, where's my Tylenol, you mm-hmm. know, and take a Tylenol and okay, I feel better. And now my go-to, because I try to practice what I preach,
of course,
like,
that's always the challenge sometimes,
right? Like, what happened today that all of a sudden I'm feeling this immense stress or mm-hmm. pressure? And what can I do to try to relieve that? You know, physically, what stretches, what movements, what organically is my body trying to tell me? Like, how does it need to move that I haven't allowed it today to mm-hmm. do? And kind of starting there before I head right to the pharmaceutical intervention. Although sometimes that's necessary.
Of course. But yeah. I think we do, it can also become habitual where people are just, you know, popping something to make themselves feel better.
Right.
But it's like, well, let's take a minute. Let's take a step back and see how we're feeling and what we can holistically do on our own to help that, you know.
And that's a lot of what movement therapy is too, is like identifying where these feelings manifest. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of my favorite things to say is like, if this part of your body could talk, what would it say? And oftentimes that's the part where somebody will be like, well, this is lonely. This is scared. It's overwhelmed, it's stressed, you know, I'm like, okay, well, let's let that part of the body speak, you yes. know, let it do the talking so that it can alleviate or relieve or just identify some of the things that are happening. Because when we overlook it or we go right to the, okay, what's going to take the pain away, we're not giving it a voice.
We're not acknowledging it.
Yeah.
There's no way to kind of let it out and let it go.
Right.
To be able to become free of it and move forward.
Right.
What are some of the tips and movements that you have for people I think probably the most common thing people struggle with is stress, mm-hmm. I'd say across the board, without kind of pinpointing different individual things, but mm-hmm. something that everybody can utilize. But what kind of movements can they use on a daily basis to kind of help alleviate some of that?
Yeah. So couple things. One, we identified breath. Mm-hmm. My thing is, one, find different ways of breathing, right? So one, we want to be aware of how we're breathing, as inefficient as it may be, right? Mm-hmm. And work on creating space in the body, finding different ways to really expand your breathing. You know, there are wonderful ways that you can find it on the internet. There are little like breathing meditations. So breath, I feel like, is really the number one way. If you can start to identify and really become more aware of how you utilize your breath, mm-hmm. you can drastically reduce how your body attaches to stress and how much it takes on. The other thing I love to say, which is very much a movement therapy intervention, is body scans. So, I go back to our old head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Mm-hmm. And I've had clients say, but there's so much between our shoulders and our knees. I'm like, okay, well, there's your body scan. Like, pay attention to those right. parts.
Totally.
But we can all remember head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the great thing, I think the best thing to do is really to do it in the morning. You don't even have to get out of bed. Just the minute your eyes open or you're conscious that you are awake, do a body scan. You know, check in. Like, how's my head feeling? Shoulders? Just really, it can be quick. It doesn't have to be mm-hmm. an extensive thing, but I think of it, you know, like when you're at the airport and, you know, they scan you in the yeah. security line, like that's what you want to think of. You know, you're just really briefly scanning your body. Mm-hmm. And it's not just to identify what isn't right, but it's also to identify what is. Like, what's feeling great today? Because at the end of the day, if that's not feeling good, that's your sign to do something, mm-hmm. change it, or figure out what happened that that part of your body now is really feeling pressure or tense. So yeah, breathing, body scan, and then just finding ways to use movement throughout the day, you know. So if you sit at a desk from 9 to 5, you know, really taking advantage of breaks. Yes, we want to have water at our desk so we're staying hydrated, but maybe making a conscious effort to go refill that water bottle, walk across the room, get some fresh air, just change your perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure your eyes are looking away from the screen every, you know, at least 30 minutes, if not more. I remember talking to, I think it was Steve Bertrand. He said during his, like lunch breaks, he would go walk the stairs,
yeah.
you know? And I think so many of us think, okay, I need to get my exercise in, but I do it for mental health.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Like, move your body to move your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go on, but those are like my top three, you know,
that's
just
perfect. That's a good
start
number.
Start getting in three. A habit.
Yeah. I think it's important to what you said about paying attention to what feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Because we always, I think, are wired to think what's feeling bad or what, you know, kind of looking at a little bit more of the negative of things.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, what's feeling good today? Like, how am I feeling great? And like, you want to strive for that feeling, but
right.
it's like, let's focus on the positive and maintaining that.
Right. Well, I think even in psychotherapy, people tend to start therapy because something's not going right, mm-hmm. you know, behavioral issues, can't concentrate, some type of like, you know, actual diagnosis. And it's interesting because I will have clients say like, you know, this has been really helpful. I'm starting to feel better. I don't know if I need therapy anymore, you know, which is okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you can terminate. I get that. But one of my favorite things to do in therapy is to sit and hear what's going right. You know, like let's all of a sudden we're sitting for 50 minutes or an hour and not one thing has been about what's wrong this
right.
week, but it's been how I've coped with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was able to manage this. I didn't have to call you. You know, I even thought about canceling our session this right. week.
And that's a huge accomplishment.
Right.
But it's like celebrating those little things and all the good stuff that happens in life. And it's like we don't need to just I think having therapy as a tool, even for maintenance, mm-hmm. is such a good check-in for yourself. To have somebody else you can even bounce ideas off or talk
right.
about how you're feeling good or, you know, things, future goals or plans that you might want to achieve.
And somebody who's impartial, you
right.
know, not
exactly.
a friend or a family member.
Exactly. Having that person that is going to be part of your support team and that can help guide you, that is detached and can kind of give you sound advice and tools to help kind of help you accomplish the things that you need to in life or want to.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think like not dwelling on the negative, you know, and not just also thinking of it as like, okay, well, we're only talking about the positive. Because I remember as an early clinician,
mm-hmm.
I really had that instinct of like, well, let's put a spin on it. How can we think positively? And that's not always meeting the client where they are.
Right.
You know, I'm like, okay, let's sit in the sadness. Let's sit in the misery. Let's sit in the stuckness,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that when those accomplishments happen, it's really important to identify them. And then for me, like hearing when it's accomplished through the body, you know, like I was feeling really stressed and I, you know, I thought about those exercises we did, or I went through that movement meditation that we did, or I just asked my body what it needed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I went with that. And didn't worry about the judgment, you know, or what people would say or think. Yeah, it's amazing. So I like to hear those successes. I like to hear those stories. And then, you know, when clients are able to actually meet their own needs, I mean, that's what therapy is about. It's like
totally
educating people on how to do something themselves. You know, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to oftentimes uncover what you already know how to do, just forgot.
For sure. You're just helping somebody along the way, you
right.
know, helping, giving them that support that they may need or not realize not realizing the tools that they have within themselves or trusting themselves. Like that's a huge thing of really trusting your gut, trusting that what you're doing is right or feels good. We, you know, tend to question a lot of things, but, and everything isn't, I like the point you bring up too. It's, you know, and people say this to me a lot with, oh, you're always so positive. And it's like, I try and make that conscious effort, and that's hard to have a positive outlook on things and celebrate those little successes and accomplishments. But life is not all rainbows and unicorns as much as we would love to think it is. Right. But embracing those struggles and those hardships and the feelings that you go through so that you can consciously move forward in a positive way.
Yeah. I even like how you said, like, move forward. I mean, like, movement isn't everything.
Exactly.
Literally. So
it is.
It's funny to me that, you know, people are always like, oh, I don't really dance, or I don't, you know, I don't really feel a connection to that. I'm like, okay, but you're moving right now.
Right.
Like,
you are. You
move
every day.
To get here.
All the time.
I work with my older adult clients, and I like to ask them, you know, people with like advanced dementia, like, how'd you move today? And their answers are always like, I breathed, I brushed my teeth, I got dressed. I'm like, yes. That's movement.
That's movement. And that's, I think, the, you know, misconception is people do probably read the title of, you know, dance therapy and think that they have to, like, they're like, well, I'm not a good dancer. What am I going to, you know?
Why would I do that?
Why would I do that? But it's like, no, it's something that you do and utilize every day.
Right, right.
That everyone does.
I mean, I made the conscious decision to put my business out there because I really wanted to educate on what dance therapy is, you know, and kind of break down those misconceptions. And that's fine. I love when people call and ask what it is, because oftentimes they call and they're like, oh, I could really use that. That's not what I thought you were going to say. You know,
like, but it is. It's very intriguing and it pulls you in and it's fascinating. Like when you sent me the message, I was like, well, what is it? Like, we need to talk about this. Like, I'm all about that. But it's just another form of, you know, therapy and a tool that you can use and is so helpful. And like I said, that's the main mission. Whatever we can do to help other people, I want to shed light on all of the different resources that people have.
Yeah.
So anyone can really come to you. Anybody can be a great client.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I the three kind of things that I tend to put out there that I say would make a great candidate for dance movement therapy, although, again, it's accessible to anybody. But one, I find it's great for people who don't have formal verbal language, whether they were born with a difference or they've lost their language due to stroke, or for people who just choose not to use language as their primary form of expression.
Okay.
Right? We've all known people that like don't talk about their feelings or
they're
kind of like a stone wall.
Yes.
You know, they don't reflect anything. And then, you know, for individuals who actually have lost all connection to their body, and I don't necessarily mean in a physical way, although that's possible too, but for somebody who has made that conscious effort to not listen to the body signals, you know, listen to the gut reaction and then consciously make the decision to go in the opposite direction.
Right.
That to me is really actually most of the clients that I've ended up seeing, you know, they're like, I want to get back to intuition. I want to get back to trusting myself and not pursuing this unhealthy path of not listening to what I know is right, because it's going to be hard, you know?
Right.
So, outside of that, anybody, I mean, obviously anyone who loves to move and really speaks to dance and also wants to work on some type of mental wellness, right, or specific mental health concern, is always a great candidate for movement therapy. But because we all move and because we all have mental health needs, it really is great for anyone once you get past what you think it is.
Right,
and
exactly.
And it isn't, you know?
Exactly.
So,
what are some of the, that stick out in your mind, like the best, I don't want to say the best clients you've helped, but like the biggest, you know, differences or impact that dance therapy has kind of helped somebody get through?
Yeah. A couple. You know, I remember really early on, one of my clients actually was referred to me through a music therapist. So she was more attached to music than anything else. But thankfully, the music therapist identified that all of her symptoms were body-based.
Okay.
And said, you know, I think you'd really benefit more from a movement therapist. Thinking like, but I don't dance, you know? And when we first started meeting, a lot of her symptoms were even more than I anticipated. You know, I didn't know that ahead of time until we really sat down and got a full history. And so I think for me, one of the first moments when she was able to identify some of these really deep-seated feelings that she was not necessarily not wanting to feel, but her body had intentionally shut down. You know, she was disassociating. She was having blackouts.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it seemed so physical that it had to be medically explained, but there weren't any medical explanations. And the first time that something really stressful happened and she did not black out, it was remarkable. It was kind of like, oh, so we've learned to open up your window of tolerance, so to speak, and identify when something is too much and how to take it in stride so that it's not all or nothing. Right. I don't know if it works for everybody, but I use this idea of like a garage door, you know, and it's not just that it's open or it's closed, but you can use that clicker and you can stop it halfway or you can bring it back down. Or you can bring it back up. You know, some of my clients are like, I don't have a garage door. That doesn't work. I live in an apartment building. I know what you're talking about.
But you can understand. Right, you can relate to what I'm trying to say.
So, you know, I think, again, not necessarily like a specific intervention, but just that first session that we had where it was like hearing the story of what invoked stress. And in my mind thinking, ooh, I bet we had another blackout. And not hearing that, you know, and then asking what was different. How did this change? And even the feeling of like, well, it didn't happen this time, but it's going to happen again. There was a shift. It was like, it didn't happen and it's not going to, you know, like
that's so empowering.
It wasn't an anomaly. It wasn't like a phenomenon that I can't control. Mm-hmm. There was actually an element of like, I think this might be it. I mean, never say never, right? But it's been years and she hasn't blacked out. So
that's incredible. But just feeling like you have the confidence and strength to deal with it. And like you can say like, no, you know.
And to have somebody believe that it's not made up, you know. I believed everything that was happening, but I never questioned it. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I always say, you know, if something medically is happening, it's in your best interest to go see a doctor because that's not my forte. But she had already done that, you know, and had already ruled out a lot of physical things. So I was like, all right. And I know that she was really scared of it happening in session. And I would always tell people, like, I've had clients have panic attacks in session. I'm always like, where else? Like, this is the safest place to do it.
Exactly.
This is the place to do it because we can practice those skills. So, it's scary the first time it happens, but I think it's very empowering because it's like, oh my God, I got through this. And if it's going to happen here, this is a great place to practice it because when it happens outside or if it happens at home, I can conquer it. You know, totally. I can deal with it. So that was definitely one that's always stuck in my mind. And then anytime I work with people that have dementia, you know, or some type of cognitive disorder, it's remarkable to me when one, new memories are formed because people assume like memory's gone. We're not going to form anything new. But they do. I mean, like I will go into a nursing home or an individual session and they might not know my name, but they'll do something that we did last week, you know? And then I'm like, Oh my gosh. You remembered. Yes. Let's do this again. And I've had clients like just recount amazing memories. I tell this a lot. I had this one individual lady, she's very confused. And I say, I was checking her ID for like her, you know, her purse, her address. And in one of our sessions, I invited her to use her fingers as paintbrushes because she was very creative. And I was able to ask her, what did you paint? And she painted this whole scene being in a boat with her sweetheart. He put his arm around her.
Oh my gosh.
She started crying because she was like, you know, I lost him years ago. It's really hard to think about, but it's these memories that, you know, make me remember the love. And no sooner did she say it, but she like kind of clicked out of it. Went back to searching in her purse. You know, it was almost like it never happened, but I know it happened, you know, like I got to be present to that moment. And that's always exciting too, when you know, like there's still somebody there, you know, they're not gone. They just have to find a way to access the memories, and movement is one of the most effective ways of doing that.
That's amazing. I feel like that has to be so hard for that individual and family members, especially, you know, because you almost don't know what to do. And I can see there can be a lot of frustration and emotion around it. And like my grandmother, she passed away in September, but she had had 3 strokes in total. But, you know, it was hard. You could see like there was like some short term memory loss too, where it's like, you know, she'd start getting repetitive and, and it's very hard. It wasn't like full blown dementia or Alzheimer's, you know, so I can just imagine like seeing that little bit of it and then having someone who does deal with that. That has to be just such a hard struggle to go through.
Absolutely. And I can't, I mean, although I have that in my family, I can't speak to those struggles because I see the person very differently.
Right.
You know, oftentimes I'm meeting them when they're already diagnosed. I didn't really know who they were before the diagnosis. So it's a lot easier for me to accept who they are now. But it's so hard for family members to, and some people do it beautifully, but with not without struggle, but it's so hard to let go of what we know that person could do or was able to do.
Yes.
And again, like I try to encourage people to just meet them in the body because it's like, that's where ability lies.
Right.
We oftentimes will put limitations like, okay, this person has a stroke, so they can't use this side of the body. But I've seen people use the other side to help move the side that can't move. So, you know, I don't come in with what can't be done. I just kind of come in with an open mind and just, as long as everybody's safe, you know, and they're not a harm to themselves or others, physically or otherwise, we just explore movement in terms of possibility. And I've always seen movement as a way that unlocks cognitive potential. You know, it's, I've seen people speak that hadn't spoken in years.
Wow.
I've seen people stand up out of a wheelchair that shouldn't be. Again, hopefully they're being safe.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's like, it's opportunities to see what is still there, you know, instead of focusing on that loss, which as family members, that's what we do, you know?
Of course, but that's great. Like to have somebody that can enable that thinking and perspective, because it's true. It's like, okay, this person, this is the situation, this is what's happening, but this is still the person that I love. Right. And we need to find other forms or therapies or ways to communicate because they're still here and you want to offer them that support.
Right.
Just because they're not who they were, you know, going through that process. And that might be a grieving process for someone to go through. But it's like, okay, we have to show the support how we can now and opening things up through movement, and you never know what memories or forms of communication can come up.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very surprising. Like even to myself, I mean, I've seen it happen enough, but when it happens, it's still like, oh yeah, this is why I do this.
You know,
like
it never gets old. Fulfilling. So. I was going to say, I mean, that has to be like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like the moments like that have to be everything.
It's reassuring because there are definitely times, you know, I've had wonderful clients that, stick with it. You know, family member really wants the person to get engagement and have quality of life. And there can be weeks where you know that the person's declining and in my mind and in my body, I'm like, oh, I don't know how much longer we're going to do this, you know? And then something happens in a session where you're like, oh, well, clearly we're going to be doing this for a while because, you know, Joe showed up today.
Yeah.
so yeah, you just kind of never know. And instead of putting those assumptions or, expectations on things, just again, going back to just meeting the person where they are, you know, and words don't always accomplish that. So if I can really be present to somebody and just mirror them and support them in their body movements, as limited as they may seem, it makes all the difference for a lot of people.
Wow, that's incredible. I just think that's awesome. When did you, how long have you had this practice?
I started Chicago. So originally we're incorporated as North Shore Dance Therapy.
Okay.
And that we opened our doors about a little over 8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And before I incorporated, I was just practicing kind of under my own name, maybe for a year or two until I thought, no, let's make a business out of this.
Totally.
And we just had enough clients actually question, I don't live in the North Shore, but I would really like your services. Just kind of opening it up to Chicago, you know, and just seeing people kind of all over Chicagoland. And now expanding to, you know, more therapists and having the ability to bring the sessions, which we've always done, like into the community, but then also offering it in a like a brick and mortar location. So
I was going to ask you, what are all the services that you have then
Yeah.
To offer.
So all forms of psychotherapy. It could be individual. We do family therapy, couples counseling, group therapy more often than not is in a setting in the community. So we tend to go to a lot of nursing homes, disordered eating facilities, treatment centers, hospitals.
Yeah.
Thankfully, a lot of those places are hiring dance therapists. So
wow.
I'm actually always excited to hear that, you know, when they're like, actually, we have a full-timer now, so we don't need to contract you.
That's
like,
awesome.
Okay, that's great. The word's getting out. Always interested in just doing trainings, not on dance therapy specifically, but just on the power of the body and why using the body in therapy can be so beneficial. Workshops, just on like wellness. I love to say you are how you move. And so ways that we can challenge how we already move in our body and how that affects our personalities, like who we are. And just trying to get into the community and just kind of change the way we see movement and mental health.
I think that's so important too, to just be out there and kind of shed light on what you're doing and have that group and network of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, then more people, it's word of mouth. People are spreading it and utilizing it. And, it's just great always to kind of, I think, go back and be in the community a little bit more.
Yeah. And, we'll get random calls from, a school looking to help support their, special ed program, or maybe it's a one-time, fair or, a walk. Like the last couple of years, we've been involved in kind of the warm up area of the walk to end, for Alzheimer's. So, it's just nice to kind of have these different avenues where I love to do this, where I can advocate, and just let people know, like, this is a thing. And, movement is really beneficial, not just for physical health, but for mental health too.
Well, it's the way that you say that and the things you've done. It's like, oh yeah. I mean, like, it just makes sense. I mean, movement.
Good. I'm so glad. It makes sense to me.
But it's like, movement is in everything.
Right.
So, it's like, it's just a completely natural fit.
Right. Yeah. And
it makes sense.
We kind of forget that.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a phenomenon. We've become disembodied. We have this mind-body disconnect.
Right.
So like, what's the saying? People used to say a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Yes.
Right. In like the 80s or 90s.
Yes. Yes.
And I like to say the mind-body connection is a terrible thing to waste, because it's like, we all have it. It's not something you have. Everybody's born with it. Mm-hmm. You just kind of have to practice it and remember that you have the ability. So.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. You're awesome. And
thank you. This has been great.
I'm just so glad you were able to come on. I'm so glad you reached out to me. And like I said, I just want to be able to, showcase all these different tools and resources for people.
Yeah, I learned so much. I've seen like some of the other businesses that you've highlighted, other companies and practices.
Yeah.
And it's great because people need resources.
Totally. I'm always intrigued and fascinated by what other people are doing to help people. And it's like, having them come on, I've learned so much, and hopefully the audience has as well, and are utilizing some of those resources, or at least can now refer those people out and be like, hey, I heard about this. This would be a great tool for you to use.
Right.
Whatever it may be.
Just, if I can add too, I think sometimes people think that some of these areas are luxuries, that they're going to be very expensive or, an investment, which I think mental health should be an investment, but there are wonderful creative outlets, different forms of therapy that are actually covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes, like in the past, I've had people say, it's not for me, I can't afford it. I'm like, well, wait, your health insurance might be able to cover this, and then maybe you can. So,
there's a lot of different wellness packages now, and preventative care and all of that, that's on there. So it's really worth investigating and looking, because a lot of these resources you
hear
can utilize.
About them. Then you call your insurance company and say, hey, I heard about this. Will my behavioral health cover some form of equine therapy, movement therapy? So believe it or not, they do. They've covered a lot more services than they used to.
Well, and that's great. That's a huge step forward. Mm-hmm. That's a huge move forward.
Yes. Yeah.
So what is your website? Is ericahornthal.com?
Yeah. ericahornthal.com. If people are specifically interested in services, they can go to chicagodancetherapy.com as well.
Excellent. And do you have different like tools and resources on there for people to kind of look through?
Yeah. On our Chicago Dance mm-hmm. Therapy website, we have some, people always want to say, what does it look like? So we have a few videos of very specific instances. But you can kind of get a feel for what it, like a group session might look like.
Perfect.
Bios of different therapists mm-hmm. and, yeah, and some resources for more information.
Awesome. And where can people follow you on social media?
So they can follow me on Instagram at, like you said, the therapist that moves you.
I love it.
I can't take credit for it. I created the tagline for my business, the therapy that moves you.
Uh-huh.
And somebody once said, well, you're making your website. You should call yourself the therapist that moves you. I was like, okay.
It's amazing. And it's stuck. That's awesome.
So yeah, Instagram's the therapist that moves you. Facebook, Erica Hornthal. And then same thing, Chicago Dance Therapy. We're on all different platforms. So look mm-hmm. us up and you can connect to us there. I love to post uplifting things that connect mind and body and ideally make people question how they're living in their body every day. So.
Yeah, I love that. Like I said, I mean, I was looking at your Instagram and I loved it. I thought it was a great visual. A lot of the things you share are very informative and
thanks.
Great. So
yeah.
I highly encourage you guys to go ahead and follow Erica because she'll have a lot of resources for you and, you know, some great motivating things on there too.
Thanks. So, yeah.
But I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you. This was great. I love to talk about movement,
yes.
but anytime somebody's willing to give, you know, time and attention and use their, you know, platform and mm-hmm. and audience, I always appreciate it. So thank you for having me.
Of course. It's just great when it's great to see people who are so passionate about what they do. That's it. You know, when you have passion for helping others and just in the career that you're in, and you know, I think it's just it's a beautiful thing. So it needs to be celebrated and shared. And for all you guys listening, any guests or topics that you'd like me to have on, send me a message to my Facebook page at Gen Z or on my Instagram at JZ Beauty and the Beast. I'll see you guys next time. Thanks. Bye.